I think when I started really getting into riding pieces and stuff like that, there was a spot down the local wasteland, backed onto a heap of factories. I think the internet has taken the thinking and the creativeness out of graffiti. You know, we all got really like schooled properly, you would say, by guys doing yards and actively out there crushing it. You know, we all had to wait our turn.
Welcome to Toy Division, Series 2, Episode 3. Somehow, this has turned into another one with another Melbourne writer. That wasn't planned. It's not because they're in Stage 4 lockdown. It's just worked out how that's happened. So anyway, check us out on Instagram, toydivision_podcast. Give us a 5-star review in iTunes. Share with your mates. Subscribe. Anyway, let's jump into this episode. Please enjoy. We are recording. I'm not going to do that fake 5-4 like the Joe Rogan thing, because I'm still fucking jealous, mate. $110 million.
Yeah. Oh, well. You $10. Do it for the love, mate. You do it for the love.
Yeah, but if there's any potential sponsors out there that want to sponsor the podcast, feel free to visit the Instagram, toydivision_podcast. Anyway, back to the real stuff. So you're in Melbourne. So just to give a bit of context, I guess this is mid-August 2020 and you're in Stage 4 lockdown. So I doubt you really want to talk about it that much more, to be honest.
Nah, that's not what this is about. So we'll just get on with it, eh?
Yeah, let's crack on. Let's talk about better times, potentially.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so, okay, let's get cracking with these Series 2 questions. So in the area you lived, who was the most up person when you first started writing?
Yeah, look, I've been thinking about these questions, man, and it's such a hard one. Like, I grew up down the end of the line, a little spot called Belgrave. It's quite prolific for a lot of graffiti writers to sort of come from in the early stages of graffiti and like even in the earlier years. But PBP and DMA was something we saw a lot of. I would probably have to say a writer by the name of Gherkin, who's now passed away, RIP, but he sort of left quite a mark in the local area, and it was always a good sort of thing to see in the alleyways and whatnot on the power pole. So, yeah.
And what were those two crews that you mentioned again?
PBP and DMA.
PPP, did you say?
No, PBP, so Puffing Billy Posse.
Oh, yeah.
And DMA, so the Mad Artists.
Instead of PPPPPPPP. Well, RIP the Gherkin, the Gherk.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. And he was a local legend, yeah.
And he was getting up, was that like pen tags, paint tags, pieces, throw-ups, just the whole...
Yeah, the whole kit and caboodle, man. He was, you know, all streets, everywhere on the line. You know, if you were from sort of upway Tacoma, Belgrave area, you'd always see plenty of his stuff around. And yeah, like as a youth, I'd always ride my push bike around the area. So yeah, seemed to see a lot of it growing up. But like obviously having a lot of older influences in my life, being my brothers and stuff like that, they were already into riding. So their rooms were trashed with tags.
All right.
Yeah, my brother, older brother, was sort of a bit more of a larrikin rather than a rider, but he hung out with a lot of the PBP and DMA guys, so always got to see plenty of their stuff.
Puffing Billy's Posse. What a sick crew name.
Puffing Billy Posse.
Sorry. Billy's are bongs, right? In Australia.
Nah. So Puffin Billy is actually an iconic, one of the first railways. It's one of the first railways in Melbourne. It still runs to this day with, it's basically just a tourist thing.
I think we should go there when I'm in Melbourne next time.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's you got to sell your house to buy a ticket, but it's pretty. it's pretty good. You know, you get to do, you can hang out the window and all that, and it's just an old sort of steam train that goes from like country town sort of out past Belgrave and that. So yeah, it's good fun.
Nice.
I haven't done it since I was a kid though.
Because I've heard of Puffing Billy before. Is it a cartoon character as well, or is it just like that iconic Melbourne thing?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a cartoon character. It would be cool if it was, but that's a great idea actually. Should get drawing.
Maybe I'm just thinking of Thomas the Wank Engine, but that's a UK thing.
Another iconic steam engine.
Yeah, and I've always thought, I think there was I actually did see a Thomas the Tank Engine thing at Central Station in Sydney recently, where they'd created.
Yeah, it. I think they run it. They run it every year up there. I wonder if anyone's ever done a panel on it.
I'm pretty sure someone has. I've actually seen a panel, I think, I'm imagining it, on a DVD. I've seen someone's actually painted the Thomas the Tank Engine. So yeah, I don't know if that's right or wrong.
I'm sure it probably would be right because, you know, knowing writers, they love to paint things that shouldn't be painted.
That's a flick, isn't it? You know, when you've done a lot of stuff and then you're like, it's like the guy in the UK who painted the train from the Harry Potter film, like that got the amount of press that got, but then it got him
rad.
But that's another whole other story. And I've actually met that guy and asked him, and he's like, I don't really want to talk about it, so fair enough. Maybe we'll get him on the podcast sometime.
He must have copped a bit of a hard time from the BTP, huh?
Yeah. Which we can always go into. We can always talk about the lovely British Transport Police.
Dogs.
Was there a person who was like instrumental in the style in your local area developing?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, being from the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, it was just a lot of crews, a lot of active riders, you know, dudes that had mad skill. As mentioned, PBP, DMA from the earlier years. But I started riding in the early 2000s. And there were a couple crews to mind that really just hammered it and did it really well. And that'd be PDT, IFE. UC crew, then you had VK, so Vandal Crazed, which was a couple of local legends that, I think a lot of us did look up to. You had the Dub D Boys. To say that really one rider influenced me or influenced the local sort of scene as such, I couldn't just pick one. I'd probably have to, you know, give you a handful of names, to be honest.
So WD Crew is something which has popped up quite a few times. Because is WD like a very well-known big crew in Melbourne?
Throughout the early 2000s, it really was. It's quite active and, you know, a lot of the riders were doing everything from bombing to trains to track sides. These days it's kind of calmed down a lot more, but you still have a couple dudes rapping it and a few connections of mine and stuff like that that still pop it up on their walls every now and then. So
do you know if it has anything to do with the WD crew from the UK? Because there's a WD crew in the UK and... just wondering.
I dare say it wouldn't, man, to be honest.
Nah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's ruined that dream. Okay, so there was the general style, and a couple of people have mentioned like that Melbourne style. you know, not 90s, very sharp, interconnected sort of style. Just for people that are listening to this to try and envisage in their minds, a very sharp, very pristine, very
kind of, I guess you could say that, man. Melbourne had a very sort of unique style, very b-boy influenced. You know, you had a lot of early writers like Puzzle and Jamie and you know, all the Dub CA boys, all the SDM boys, shout out to them. But you know, everything kind of stemmed off that b-boy era. So you do have a lot of New York influences that kind of ran throughout, and then each individual writer would give it their own bit of flavor, and then it would kind of stem off from there, man. So yeah, it's very sharp, a lot of connections. You know, if you know how to do it, good usage of color, and for anyone that knows Melbourne, I'm sure they know what I'm talking about.
But I would now say, so I'm envisaging in my mind, so I'm thinking a lot of the letters, you know, I'm thinking of Puzzle, you know, there's very thin, well, not very thin, but quite thin letters, but then very interconnected, technical, a lot of that, like, I guess the older sort of style where everyone was like making interconnected, very pristine, you know, you really go, not over the top, but it would all be about everything being very crisp and very pristine and very sharp. In your mind, when do you think, because you look at Melbourne now and that style is obviously still there, but it's changed, you know, the influx of stuff, again, blame the internet. But when do you think it started to change, you know, from your view?
So if you want to get into it, like you said, the internet, like, I mean, early on in the piece, internet was a great thing for like writers to connect, and, you know, dudes that were repping their own style and their own lines and all that, you know, 12 Oz Prophet and whatnot, had all the forums and everything, and, you know, dudes that were out actively doing it, or you had other guys that were actively out getting photos of yards being done or walls or whatever. That was a good era. I would probably say around about 2010 is where I started to see the scene drop off style-wise. You had like your new wave of writers coming in that weren't as schooled or had no real direction, writing for the wrong reasons again, and just seeing that being no influence coming out in their style, guys just getting up to get up. Volume over quantity, really. I mean, over quality. So that's when I reckon I started seeing the scene drop off a bit.
Which is interesting, because I guess it's quite a common thing, isn't it? Across the world, the internet just, you know, we're looking back now, and, you know, at a point in history, you know, even trying to explain to some of my younger siblings, saying to them, imagine if you didn't have the internet, and they're almost like, what do you mean? I was like, imagine if you didn't have the internet, and they're like, well, what, how would you do anything? how would you do anything? How would you get anywhere? How would you work out? Like, I was talking to someone about back in the day with, you know, to work out the times of films at the cinema, rather than just going down there and looking at the boards to see what was actually happening, there'd be like a listing in the back of the newspaper. You'd ring that up, and then you'd have to listen to them at 3 p.m. There will be Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade at 3 p.m., 4:30 p.m.
Yeah, for sure.
And you'd have to listen all the way through. Otherwise, you just go to the cinema and you wouldn't know. And, you know, that whole thing about the internet has just obviously changed graph for the positive, but also I think the kind of free-for-all and being influenced by people from all over the world, which I think is a great thing, because people don't get so rigid and like, that's not real graph. That's not real.
I guess the main answer to the question would be that I think the internet has taken the thinking and the creativeness out of graffiti. you know, people, like you said, back in the day used to have to use their minds if they wanted to do something. People would be then more creative because they're using their brain to actually think of something rather than constantly being brain bashed by fucking Instagram and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
Because it's almost now you see that there's like a certain thing that might be coming out, and then it's almost like local. You know how there's like trends. So I think it was Lush. Like Lush sucks. Did a thing with like this year's fashionable graffiti things, and it was from a couple of years ago, and it was like, no border color, cobwebs, interconnecting, la la la, and it's almost like. That's funny because then you look and you used to be able to identify scene specific things. So you might see something, that's a Melbourne style. Or you look at Sydney and think that's a Sydney style. Or you look at London and be like, that's a London style, whatever. But I guess now the bloody doors have been blown off and everyone's just like, fucking whatever. You might see something from some dude in Brazil and think, oh, I like that. I'll use that. That's a good idea. But I guess, you know, for a long time, I was very like, no, oh, that's bullshit. You can't do that. But now I'm like, you know, I'll just borrow / steal other people's ideas. Easy. self-confessed thief.
You know what we call that.
Biter, a toy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure,
A biting toy. But you know what? To think that anybody is not influenced by someone else is a kind of one of those things where you think, oh yeah, I made that up. But we've already talked about, you know, multiple writers, multiple crews. To think that we're creating something original, you know, I don't know where you could set the cutoff point. But what I like these days is when you see someone do something and it's very different and you might think it's a pile of shit, but at least they've done something different, because doing the same thing over and over again, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, most writers in their younger years, when like the early stages of development or whatever, when they're looking at graphs and sort of getting a feel for it in the first few years, like obviously, yeah, there would be certain writers that would influence you, or, you know, like a style from a line that you grew up on or something that you see over and over and over, and you do create your own style, but obviously, yeah, it's influenced in somewhere for sure.
Just don't carbon copy someone else's, because there's talking about that as well. There's a guy in Sydney, and I won't say what this person's tag is, and they're putting up, and this isn't style thievery, but it's very clear, this person, they're putting up XTC and RIS next to their tag.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, mate, you are not in XTC and you are not in RIS. Like, they are, for people that do or don't know, they're two of the biggest well-known crews in New York City, especially XTC. And it's like, I keep seeing him put it up. Well, I guess it's a he, it could be a she. And I keep seeing him put it up and think, mate, you look
how dare you assume it could be a he or a she?
I know, might be an alien. Might be a fucking intergalactic alien. But you know, it's that thing of like, people just see through it and they're like, come on, mate. Yeah. Every time I see one of his tags, I just think, or their tags. And then he's like crossing people out. And I'm just like, and then putting XTC over it. And it's like, do you realize how fucking toy you look? People know you're not in XTC and RIS. Although, maybe they are randomly, but I doubt it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, don't get me started on Sydney style being exactly the same as other shit, because I think a majority of Sydney stuff is all, you know, stemmed off from TM and OSF and all that. People just copy, and every writer you see out on the line has the same A or the same R or the same, you know, it's all fucking same to me, mate.
no biting allowed. This interviewee is like, biting equals death. So, or is it one of the other guys in one of the other episodes was like, you can bite, it was a French guy, he was like, you can bite whatever you want, but just don't fucking bite my stuff. You can go over whatever you want, just don't go over me, bruv.
Yeah, I think I heard that one.
Yeah, shout out to that guy, what a legend.
Yeah, for sure.
So, was there a specific spot that was like important or seminal to the local scene where you grew up?
Yeah, look, when I started writing, actually doing pieces and stuff like that, there was a spot down the back of the local factories, kind of has a massive opening with like wasteland area and stuff like that, called Dorset Walls. And like, there's a fair stretch there, probably about a kilometer and a bit of just, yeah, factory tilt slab concrete just hammered with years and years and years of graffiti and pieces and stuff like that. So that was a local spot for a lot of guys. You know, you occasionally get visitors come down from Sydney or Queensland or whatever to paint with other crews, and it's quite a known spot for like big productions and jams and stuff like that. So yeah, it was always really cool to see, you know, grow up seeing all the different pieces and like even the historical ones and that down there. Yeah.
And did you try and find yourself a little like bit right out the way to like just have a little try, like, oh, find a little tiny bit right on the edge?
Yeah, look, I think there used to be like a bit of a section. I do remember they put an extension on the wall. So down the right end, they built a heap of new factories, and I was actually one of the first people to ever get a piece on there. Probably being like one of maybe my first five pieces. So yeah, managed to get it when it was just raw concrete with no graph on it. Now it's been hammered over the last 15, 20 years, but yeah, that was my little piece. You kind of, as a young writer, without a heap of skill, still learning and whatever, you tended to stay away from the burners and things like that. You'd more or less just admire them.
I wish people did that now. I really wish people did that now, because I've seen some fucking monstrosities where people have come down and like just done the shittest piece in the middle of a production. So anyone that's listening to this that's just started writing or doesn't know, you do not go and do a piece in the middle of a production.
Especially
if you're really fucking shit.
I guess it's just a different era, really. But I was lucky enough to kind of grow up writing with a couple dudes who had really, really good sort of connections in the graph scene, and you know, we all got really like schooled properly, you would say, by guys doing yards and actively out there crushing it. You know, we all had to wait our turn, and we all got taught what the right and wrong thing was to do. And, you know, where not to paint and where not to rack paint from and all that kind of stuff. So I think, yeah, being in that circle of people was good for me, because it kind of taught me a bit about respecting the scene.
Yeah. And I think when we have these conversations, people who are like new school or whatever they want to call themselves are just like, you fucking old cunts, fucking hell. But, you know, I guess graffiti's changed so much. Time I've been painting, and I don't know, some of it's changed for the better, some of it's kind of just fallen apart. Like, you go some tolerated / hall of fames and people just do dumb shit, or people just go and fucking like paint yards and do really shit fucking pieces and burn it out for everyone else, and people are like, yeah, well, it's all fucking free expression. It's like, yeah, but if you go and do the same back jump like 20 times in a month, weirdly enough, that's gonna
pinched.
Yeah, and it will then be really fucking difficult for anyone else to do it. And, you know, there's mixed opinions on that because people go, well, surely it's just like do whatever you want. But, you know, that's how spots get, that's how spots get fucked up.
Yep. Yeah, you don't rinse a spot, that's for sure. And if a spot's good, you, I guess that's why people try and put things on lock and they actively, you know, are seeing who's painting spots. And I think the scene's changed a lot these days, but, you know, back when I was a kid, we had crews that would actively sort of pretty much live in the backyard of any yard they had claim on, just waiting for, you know, toys or whatever to come in and fucking hit it so they could, you know, roll them or slash their panels or go in and even cap their panels.
Yeah, it's a new, I mean I guess the difference is now is that, you know, you look at spots now, especially like train spots, and because of the level of security they've stepped a lot of them up to, that scares a lot of the like inexperienced writers and experienced writers as well from doing the yards. And, you know, it's an interesting one because, you know, you know, you can, I guess it used to be like maybe you'd link up with someone, you'd show them a yard, but then when they then take all their mates back and they're like, oh yeah, you show them once and you're like, you can't show anyone this, don't. And then they're like, this is sweet. And then they take their mates back every fucking weekend and burn it out. But
that's quite common, I think. I found when I was overseas in my younger days, being a youth abroad, trying to get some steel done and that, and linking up with a couple crews, and dudes were very wary on, you know, showing me certain spots or whatever.
Is it because you're an Australian, or do you reckon that's just across the board?
I think it might have something to do with being an Australian, but
but that's because Aussies go abroad. Yeah, they might get shown spots, but I think, you know, say with the London Underground, it was like, oh, you can't take the Aussies to do the spots, but Corpse, Banos, Pubes,
yeah,
Dorps,
they
basically, you know, a lot of spots in London were seen as you just couldn't do them. They were undoable. Only a certain crew was able to do it, and it was like, and then they just came and just smashed the fucking back doors off it, and oh shit.
I reckon I came in just after that. You know, I was overseas and had a few like people from where I was visiting take me to spots, but they were very hesitant on taking me to the good ones because, you know, Hughes and Dorps and all that kind of.
Don't take the Aussies. Don't take the Aussies because they'll smash the fucking system and then show us all up.
Yeah. Well, that ended up happening, but not so much for me. I got a couple done and made a few really good friends when I was over there, and you know, still mates with them to this day. Really, got some cool stories and some memories, but I didn't quite reach Dorp's level.
Yeah, that was shout out to those guys because they. You know, I even still now see flicks of their panels from that period of time, and it was just like, fuck, they were going in. What was the first store that you can remember in your area where you were actually able to get good quality paint, either through purchase or through racking?
So it wasn't really in my area. I grew up at the end of the line, in the bush, really. So we had to travel all the way into the city, into North Melbourne, a shop that used to be called VA Paint Supplies, which is now, as most Melbourneites would know it, as Giant Productions. So, back then it was really just like a little gangster sort of hangout for a lot of, OG heads, and also a bit of a hangout for guys that were just waiting around the corner for some poor young kid so they could rob him for all his molotovs or whatever. But yeah, it would be VA Paint Supplies.
Right, and that was somewhere you would actually travel to? Because
yeah, so I think North Melbourne was probably about an hour and a half. Well, I mean, back then, you know, you get a can of Moltona or Belton Rail, as it was, or Spanish, and they were all like really expensive, you know, ranging from about $11 to $14 a can. So yeah, as a kid it was like, fuck, you know, we got into it, we experienced it, we liked, you know, the smell of cool paint and the clean lines you could get with it, but much rather racking our own, you know, or even mixing our own paint was a big thing in the early stages. We would spend days out on our back porches with our faces covered and the freezer and a bucket of hot water, just mixing dye marks into, you know, cans, Spanish cans that we'd either have left over from purchase or that we found near a wall or whatever. We would just pick them up and make sure they still had pressure and mix away. So, yeah.
It's a bit like with nozzles. Like, I'm still in a mindset now where, and I just think that this is when I didn't really have any money. So, you know, nozzles, like spray can nozzles, caps, whatever you want to call them. Like having a New York fat cap or having a fat cap, like you just wanted to keep it going for as long as fucking possible. You might then soak it to then clean it out. And you're like, I need to save this one cap. And even now I've in my garage, I reckon I've got like, I must have a 1,000+ spray can nozzles because I'm fucking so stingy with them. I'll give them to if a mate goes, I won't go, no, can't have my fucking skinny caps, but I'll try and use like the same cap. So I'll try and use one New York from start to finish.
You can probably edit this bit out, but I recall you being very much like that with your nibs.
Yeah, hence all the shit pieces. No, that's all right. Yeah, you can.
No comment.
Yeah, no comment forever. Well, we can keep that in. That's fine. Yeah. The truth is
funny,
out there.
Funny.
So one
thing.
Yeah,
definitely caps were probably the most expensive part of riding for me because you couldn't go out and rack caps back then. You had to buy them from a graph shop. So. Yeah, like racking all of our paint was easy back then, but as a kid, you know, you really had to buy your nibs if you wanted it, you know, unless you were willing to sit them in a bucket of thinners or whatever to unblock them, which I did a couple times as a kid. Worked a lot with paint, so knew how to clean the caps out, no worries.
Well, someone was talking to me about like a metallic reusable spray can nozzle, because you know we're in the era now of like less waste, you know, recycling plastics. Like if someone came out with the idea of like a reusable spray can nozzle that was like metallic or something that it would block, but then you could just, you know, less waste. And I'm like, yeah, but writers are often fucking stingy bastards, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of riders start off racking their shit, so they don't want to pay for shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it be paint or food or fucking clothes. Back in the day, you grew up not wanting to pay for shit. Even if you had fucking $1,000 saved in your bank account, and you'd go out and steal a fucking bag of paint because you ain't paying for shit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It wasn't just the days of you can get 6 cans for $40 and they're all right. And because it was a bit like, say, I went to Bunnings today and I got like a tub of white, like tinted, it was like $15. And I was just thinking, I easily, well, I probably wouldn't, I'm a bit fucking old to be busted for stealing fucking Buff from a hardware store. But like, it's that whole thing of like, when you've got the money, it's kind of just like, oh, it's just so much less hassle. You know, there was that guy, Eine, E-I-N-E, on a podcast talking about how him and his mates used to go all the way to fucking Holland to rack Buntlax and good quality paint. Like they'd get the coach over the night, they'd stay there, they'd go. And then he realized that he could just go and buy paint from a guy in London. And he was like, then I realized this is just way fucking easier.
Yeah, well, I guess you get a bit smarter as you go.
Sometimes
what it's all about.
Or you get dumber and more paranoid.
Yeah, drugs do that.
So one thing you did say when we were arranging this is you're like, I've got some toy stories. I've got some toy, because you're like the you know, the whole thing of toy division in the last series was talking about like dumb, embarrassing questions. And even though the questions have changed, you're like, I've got some stories I want to tell. So here's your chance to shine and maybe have a bit of, you know, cathartic talking through these things. So yeah, go in, tell us a story where you're like, oh, slap yourself on the head thinking about it.
Well, you gotta flip the original question at me and then I'll answer it.
Fuck, I can't remember the bloody questions. So I'm just gonna freestyle it. So when you first started out, is there an occasion or occasions where you think, what the fuck was I doing? And maybe you've never told anyone this story. Give us the juicy stuff.
Well, I hope I've managed to stay anonymous as possible. But there was a couple times sort of when we first started doing pieces and things like that, we'd be sitting there smoking billies all night or whatever, and we'd go, oh fuck, we want to go out and paint. So where's a spot that we can go paint? And we'd think of a wall or whatever, but it'd have a couple pieces on there from a few people that we didn't necessarily get along with. And instead of sort of stirring the pot or whatever, we'd just go there and fucking straight out slash all their pieces and then just cap straight over them.
Fucking bastards. What, would you actually names? Would you actually leave names, or was it just literally just cross out and just write cunt over it?
No, we wouldn't, you'd see the line coming out from each end of your piece or whatever. We were smart about it. We weren't stupid. But that's probably the toyest thing I've ever done. And to be honest, I think I only ever did it on one or two walls. And I probably got my comeuppance from it over the years anyway, with having pieces of my own taken out. Definitely one of the toyest things I've done, that's for sure.
Just mindlessly slashing someone, basically.
Just being too stoned to fucking walk for half the night to find a wall. We just go hit one around the corner and just take it out. Unfortunately, but like I said, probably got our bad karma for that in one way or another.
So the thing is how stoned I was. And I just often think if I wasn't as stoned, I would have been way more active. But again, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it's bloody useless, isn't it?
Yeah. See, I don't know. I know dudes that are stoners, man, and they're some of the most upriders in Melbourne. So, a little bit hard. I think each individual person is different with getting high and how they choose to let it. They can either be high and lazy or high and active, one or the other, really.
Yeah, I've got a mate like that who just when I first moved here, well, not first moved here, but here, we were going out and he'd just come pick me up from home and just take me to all these spots. I was like, how do you know all these canal spots? And like, and he's just like, I just get really stoned and then just go and walk around for hours. And I'm like, fuck, that is the opposite of me. I get stoned and I can't even think about, I don't ever really get stoned because I just lose the bloody plot. But I'm just
the curtains and fucking peek out from the darkness.
Yeah, be a curtain twitcher. Just like, God, what's happening? The police are out there. For what? Yep. For nothing. So, yeah.
For sure, man. For sure.
Okay, so that was a toy story, and I guess that's that hindsight, isn't it? Looking back and thinking, oh, fucking what a bunch of dickheads. But
yeah, well, I think maybe I probably wanted to share that to get it off my chest, even. So no more bad juju came my way for doing wrong all those years ago. But that's probably the toyest thing I ever remember doing. Yeah, for sure.
Now you are. You've done your sentence. You've submitted that fact to the internet. And people go, oh, it's on the internet forever. And I'm like, you do realize the internet could just suddenly disappear one day. and all these fuckers that make loads of money from TikTok and Instagram and whatever. Yeah, good luck with that. But anyway, maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just me projecting that I want to make money from the internet. So I haven't been asking people about shout outs, but the last person I interviewed wanted to shout out. So fuck it, I'm bringing it back. Is there anyone or anything or anybody or any alien life form you want to shout out?
Shout out to the boys. You guys know who you are. If you listen, there it is. Shout outs to everyone being active and submitting their name to the scene and doing the right thing and being respectful about how they approach painting and all that. And yeah, I think the number one lesson we got out of today's interview was don't fucking bite. But yeah, shout outs to anyone fucking keeping the streets beautiful. And yeah, FTG, ACAB, all that.
Question right at the end. So I guess it would be, if you were on a desert island and you needed to take, and there was a wall on this desert island, right? It's not just sand, because you'd be like, why the fuck would I need this? But if you were on a desert island and there was like a really nice wall, and you obviously had food and whatnot, and water, because otherwise you'd be dead, and you could take one brand of paint with you to paint that wall for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Plasticoat, 100%.
Boom.
No fucking doubt about it.
What a good answer. Because I was talking to someone else about it. They're like, oh, I don't know. Would I take this or would I take that? And I'm just like, I think if it was me, I'd probably choose High Coat, which is like an English brand, which is actually just reliable. So Plastico.
Yeah, sweet. For sure.
That's a real Aussie writer speaking there. So thanks so much for chewing the fat with me about the internet and graffiti. And I'm just going to stop recording. So thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, mate.
Another great episode with an Australian writer. As stated before, the winner of the raffle to win a prize for a 5-star review picked at random. Their iTunes username is 13878101004. It's a pretty unique username. So please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, share with your mates, and these episodes will keep coming. Anyway, give us a shout, Toy Division _podcast on Instagram. Peace out, Toy Division.